International Skateboarding Convention joined the protesters in a festive and defiant street party in front of the convention center.
Healthcare is a right! Healthcare is a right! Healthcare is a right!
Pedro Rodriguez of the Action Alliance of Senior Citizens spoke outside GlaxoSmithKline, one of the nation's largest pharmaceutical companies.
We're back here again at this headquarters. It's a landmark for Philadelphia seniors, because this corporation, this global organization, this drug manufacturer represents what stands in between millions of senior citizens across the country and their ability to maintain their health, to maintain a decent quality of life, to maintain decent peace of mind.
Today's actions have resulted in at least 5 arrests of protesters, including a 12-year-old skateboarder in town for the skateboarding convention. One police officer suffered a cardiac arrest. Protests continue tonight and throughout the week in Philadelphia. Jenka Soderbergh reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
A congressional subcommittee voted last week to cut hundreds of millions of dollars from public broadcasting. These cuts would eliminate funding for digital conversion, interconnection, ready-to-learn programs, and rescind the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, or CPB, appropriation by 25%. However, a variety of groups, including National Public Radio and child programming advocates, have come to the Capitol to say no to the cuts. Selena Masuta reports from Washington.
While waiting to take the podium, Democratic Senator Hillary Clinton of New York shakes hands and discusses the future of public broadcasting funding with Rochelle B. Chong, a former Federal Commissions Committee, or FCC, member.
Well, there's very good reason to be concerned about it. And even if we can return to the...
Clinton and Chong joined hundreds of adults and children, including life-size public broadcasting service cartoon characters, on House steps to say no to proposed cuts that would decrease children's programming. Chong, who served on the FCC from 1994 to 1997, believes that congressional members who support the cuts in funding will be treading on the authority of the FCC.
They're cutting other aspects of the funding which affect whether the public TV stations can transition to digital TV, which has been ordered by the FCC that these stations must do. So from my standpoint as a former commissioner, it's a little bit ridiculous to order that they transition to DTV and then cut funding for them to purchase equipment that they have to have to make that transition. I'm also very concerned about the programming on the children's side, which I think every parent in America is concerned about.
Congressman Earl Blumenauer, an Oregon Democrat, says that stations who do not have the big budgets of public broadcasting stations located in metropolitan cities will suffer the most.
It's not just a reduction, it's an elimination. In rural and small town America, it's much more expensive to broadcast, and they don't have the population base to provide the contributions. There'll always be public broadcasting in L.A. and New York and Chicago and in Portland, Oregon, my hometown. It may not be as vital, but it'll still be there. But in rural and small town America, there will be no alternative. They will lose this voice, and it would be a tragedy.
By Thursday, a Senate Appropriations Committee will make their own suggestions concerning CPB's future funding. Many believe that the committee will restore some of the funding. Selena Masuta, FSRN in Washington, D.C.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.
And it's only 8 minutes late, but it's time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. And again, sorry for the late start. We're required by FCC law to devote a bit of our broadcast day to incompetence. So that's sometimes results in programming being askew. But all the less for me to think about now, since I have 8 less minutes to fill with mindless banter. And, well, I guess the first thing to do is turn off the old phones, because they kind of get in the way sometimes, if you know what I mean. One phone down, one more to go. All right. And that's it, that's it. Nobody can disturb us now. Good evening. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you until the hour is up. And it's been one of those weeks for me where working on the latest issue of the magazine, and when that happens, I just kind of lose track of everything. I was very surprised when somebody told me today was Tuesday. Very surprised. I could not believe it. I don't know where the time went. What I basically do in issue mode is just sit in front of a machine and just edit and type and read and write, and it's, you know, I'm aware of things changing outside. I'm aware of it being light. I'm aware of it being dark. I'm aware of it being light again. I hear phones ringing. I see email coming in. Doors are pounded on. Doorbells rung. Rocks sometimes thrown. And really the only way that I can get through this particular mode is to ignore all of that. Because, you know, if you don't ignore that, life really gets in the way. Yeah, life is the biggest obstacle to life. I mean, it's true. If you pay attention to every little thing, every little detail that somebody wants you to fill in the blanks for, every time somebody cries out, "Help, I'm drowning," every time that you have to pay attention to something else that takes away from your task at hand, you lose. You lose ground, you lose time, you lose work. And work is the most important thing of all. All right, I don't really believe that, but, you know, but basically what I'm trying to say is, if you were trying to reach me in some way and I haven't responded, don't take it personally, because I'm ignoring the entire world. So, therefore, anything I say today will be news to me as well as news to you, because I haven't really been paying attention to what's been going on. A little bit of attention. You know, sometimes I have something on in the background and it sort of, you know, filters in. So I'm aware that O.J. Simpson is not guilty, and that Michael Jackson has a new album coming out, and President Clinton's in some kind of trouble. I don't know. I'm aware of various things that are going on. Okay, so let's get right to it. Well, actually, you know, I should talk about the events of last week. Last week we had Fred up here from Montreal, who brought the smart car down. And if you ever want a life-changing experience, driving a smart car is the way to do this. No question about it. You know, I always knew it would be unusual, it would be fun, it would be different. I figured, you know, a few people would stare, point, ask questions. But I never, in my wildest dreams, anticipated this kind of a response. People literally chasing after you in the street. I don't know why. I mean, yeah, you know, I saw these things. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, visit the website, www.smart.com. If you can't spell smart, never mind. And you'll see what these little two-seat cars look like. And they're pretty cool. You know, I saw them in Europe years ago, and I said, wow, you know, I'd like to have one of those. That would be really cool. They look nice. They seem to travel just fine, and they're very compact. They must get great gas mileage. And yes to all of that. Incredible gas mileage. They zip around like nobody's business. They're not sluggish or slow in any sense. There's actually space inside for you to store some things. Space for one extra person. And an engine, which is really hard to find. And when you do find it, you'll be surprised at the size of it. But driving around anywhere, literally anywhere that we went in the last week, because that's basically what last week was all about, was debuting the smart car in the States. The reaction was just something, it's like out of a science fiction movie. You know, you're walking around with two heads or something. I'm used to people pointing and staring, even laughing sometimes. Okay, so, you know, I expect a certain amount of that no matter what the situation unfolding. But this, every time you pass somebody, every time, without fail, their head turns. Most of the time they smile or laugh or point. And if you stop anywhere, stoplight, accident scene, parking space, people will come up to you and start asking questions. And they're always the same questions, too. Is this a car? Someone thought it was a scooter. What kind of mileage does this get? How much does it cost? Can I get one? Always the same questions. Whether I was in New York City, whether I was in Brooklyn or Long Island. I mean, even cops want to know, you know, cops standing on the street. They want to know how to get one of these things. Firemen are waving at us. I can't recall having so much fun driving a vehicle, but, you know, after a while, after you do this for a couple of days, you realize it's a major pain in the ass because you can't go anywhere. You really can't go anywhere without... It's like being Leonardo DiCaprio, you know? I mean, I imagine that must be what it's like, you know, except he's not a car, he's a person, and when he walks around, it's like you're driving a smart car. Although the questions are probably different. So, you know, it's actually turned into a situation where I'm avoiding driving the thing. Unless I know I can get from point A to point B without having to stop a whole lot. And maybe at night, where people won't really see what you are. Although, the other night, they were paving Route 347 out here. Doing a damn good job, too, I must say. Compared to the Long Island Expressway, which is taking a generation to pave for some reason, these guys are paving Route 347 in like a week. So, hats off to you if you're even listening. But I had to pass all of them on the road while they were doing this. And, you know, I think I might have stopped the progress of the work for quite some time. Everybody was laughing and giving me thumbs up and things like that. It was kind of cool until they poured the hot tar on somebody by accident. But you live and you learn. So that's what the last week has been all about, fun. And fun is a good thing. I even parked the thing. This is kind of cool. Imagine a parking lot with little white stripes. I parked it horizontally within those white stripes. So instead of parking lengthwise, I parked sideways, and I fit easily. That's the kind of cool things you can do. And that drew a crowd as well. So we got to figure out how to get these things into this country and get rid of the SUVs. That's my little project for the next 100 years or so. You know, I realize I don't have anything against somebody owning an SUV, okay? I really don't. I guess it's kind of similar to my take on guns. You know, if you feel you need one, fine. But just don't endanger the rest of us with it, all right? So, now, I say to these people that have the things, do you really need them for every single errand you run to 7-Eleven? You know, I see people driving these huge vehicles. Really, really huge vehicles. You can't see past them when you're in back of them. You can't see around them when you're next to them. They're responsible for so much in the way of hazards and aggressive driving and just simply bad driving. But do you really need to use these things just to pick up a couple of items at the store? Or to pick up your kid at school or something? One kid. You know, if you have 10, okay, fine, I can see that. Now, the situation may call for an occasion where you need a big vehicle, and fine, have your big vehicle. But wouldn't it be better if you kept it in the garage until you really needed it? Like, say, if you were moving or carrying a piano, although I don't think very many SUV people carry pianos for some reason. But if you had something big, you know, to transport, that's the time to use it. Now, we don't really have, you know, the weather of the Yukon where you need these super vehicles that can drive up a mountain or something like that. You don't really need that here in New York. Yet I see people driving these things. I don't know what's going through their heads, but I tell you what's going through their pocketbooks is money. Because when you pull up to a gas station, you see these things filling up. You look at the amount, because I've been pulling up to the diesel pump lately with the smart car, since it takes diesel. And the amount that diesel vehicles take is simply staggering. A lot of big vehicles are diesel. I see it at the regular pumps as well. We're talking about $50, $60 sometimes. And I imagine it goes higher than that. Oh, the theme's repeating. How nice. Sure, why not? Why not? Let it be that kind of a day where the theme repeats, although I'm going to hit this repeat button so that never happens again. So when I fill up the smart card, it never goes above 10, and people point and seem almost angry at that. How dare you? How dare you come up to the pump and spend so little? The conversations you get into is just simply unbelievable. So the only way to save me from this, hell I'm going through right now of finger-pointing, laughing, and questions, is for more people to get these things and start driving them around so I don't have to deal with the brunt of it. Okay, other news. I figured out that I'm leaving in exactly a month from 2 days ago. A month from last Sunday. Yeah, that's when the Queen Mary II embarks on the voyage across the Atlantic Ocean. That's when I start my round-the-world voyage, I guess is the best way to describe it, where I'm either on the water or on the land, but not in the air. And we'll see how long it takes. It's going to encompass the What the Hack convention going on in Holland. That's a hacker convention taking place in the great outdoors. And if you have no idea what such a thing is like, I strongly advise you to check it out, because it's really, really kind of cool. And they have all the permits necessary. We talked about this on off the hook a couple of weeks ago, how some permits were being held up. Well, all that's been straightened out. Everything is going according to plan. And it should be a ton of fun. I've been to a couple of these things. HAL 2001, the CCC camp in 2003, and HEU back in 1993. They have a history over there of simply doing things in a different way than we do here. Imagine building an entire community and hooking it up to the internet and somehow bringing electricity and setting up all these tents and just building this community. It's one of the most amazing things ever. You can be a part of that. And we'd love to have you over there. It's not that hard to do. It's not that hard to get over there. It's not that hard to actually be a part of. You just got to want to do it. Visit whatthehack.org and you'll get all the information. And actually, there's something else going on too, which is really pretty cool. What in God's name kind of browser is this? You can't enter a URL. Okay, that's very strange. I'm going to close this right now and we'll never speak of this again. And open a browser that actually has a line for you to enter a URL in. And I'm going to show you or talk to you about something else that's pretty unique that the Germans are organizing for the What the Hack conference. It's called the Hack Train. Yeah, the Hack Train. Now, they actually have the ability over there in Europe to rent out a train and take it wherever they want to go. Now, if you go to hacktrain.de, you'll see, well, actually, you'll see it in German. Okay, let's click on the English homepage here. All right, and I'll read from the website. In summer 2005, the next incarnation of the big hacker camps, HEU, HIP, HAL, will start in the Netherlands. This time the hackers will meet at What the Hack in Hertogenbosch. It's not important that you say the name right. Now, starting on the 28th of July until the 31st of July, the geeks will get a full-featured program. Our goal is to provide you a geek-compatible way to travel there. Now, 386 seats. There will be power, there will be network connectivity, and all kinds of other things. And this train is going to travel all around Europe. Actually, all around Germany. Okay, there's a limit, I guess, to how much you can actually do. But there are various cities. I'll give you a few of the cities. Hanover, Frankfurt, Mannheim, Düsseldorf, Essen. You can basically join the train at different cities, and it'll take you to the conference. And I guess it takes you back as well. Yes, it's a round-trip thing. And if you're in a particular station in Germany, they can actually work it out so that the train will meet you someplace. Can you imagine doing that in the United States? renting out a train and just taking it. I don't think we get to drive it, though, do we? All right, I'm not sure about that. I don't think we get to drive it. That would be awesome, but probably not very safe. So, yeah, that's all part of the What the Hack festivities, and that's, like, the second leg of my my journey. Third leg being the Trans-Siberian Express, which I think technically is a Trans-Mongolian Express in this case, since I'll be winding up in Mongolia. And from there, going across Asia through China to Japan, and then across the Pacific Ocean back here and Amtrak across the United States. Easily the scariest part of the journey will be Amtrak. So that starts in less than a month, and will be, I guess, a month from today will be a test to see just how the technology works. Because what I'm hoping to do is record the show while I'm on the boat and upload it to the net and have it downloaded here and played on the air, where it will sound like I'm in the studio, where I'm actually not. The marvels of technology. And of course, Off the Hook will be coming to you live every week from someplace. So you'll get to hear all kinds of weird sounds as that takes place. All right. Continuing on the subject of gas-guzzling vehicles and various American bad habits, I guess is the most polite way to say it. This is a story that I ran across today. For $160, you can turn a Hummer H2 into a zero-emissions vehicle. No tools or mechanical ability are required. Interested? Oh, yeah. Sounds really interesting, doesn't it? That's the promise of a California company called TerraPass. Not Terror. Terra, as in Earth. It would cost less, of course, to turn a Chevrolet Cobalt into a zero-emissions vehicle. That would only be about $40. The idea is the latest implementation in the trading of pollution credits. Those are the market-based innovations introduced a few years ago, which allow smoke-spewing companies to buy and sell the right to emit certain amounts of pollutants into the air. The stickers that TerraPass sends its customers do nothing to stop pollutants from coming out of a car's tailpipe. Instead, the company offers its customers the chance to reduce pollutants from other sources, like power plants, in an amount equivalent to that produced by their car. That way, you can drive your car while having no net effect on the amount of pollution in the air, according to the company. Okay, if you're as mixed up as I am at this point, and I read the article once before, too, and I still don't get it. If you buy a TerraPass, the money will be used to purchase smog allowances on the Chicago Climate Exchange. The Climate Exchange allows polluting companies that produce less than a certain amount of airborne pollutants to sell credits to other companies that then allow them to go over the limit. The overall limits are reduced over time, making it more costly to exceed them. Organizations and companies that buy pollution credits reduce the overall supply of credits and also make it more costly for companies to exceed the limits. Since car drivers are under no legal compulsion to try to compensate for their tailpipe emissions, the TerraPass will only appeal to those who feel some guilt about their driving and want to do something about it. Oh my God, I cannot believe this. We're buying guilt? People who feel guilty are supposed to buy these things? I mean, nothing is being done. The cars are polluting just as much. Someone's making a profit at this, I'm sure, somehow. And supposedly some company is reducing its emissions because money is involved somehow. It boggles the imagination. This is how Americans deal with pollution. By trading coupons or stickers or whatever. Well, since this program began, relatively few SUV drivers have been buying them, and that's not surprising to anybody. Most have gone to owners of fuel-efficient cars that produce relatively few pollutants in the first place. Yeah, so there's no SUV guilt out there. And if you watch SUVs zipping around, then I think you'd believe that pretty readily. Okay, We get feedback all the time. LTW@2600.com is our address. Please feel free to write to us with whatever comments you might have. And tell us when and how you listen to Off the Wall. Dear Off the Wall, I saw a smart car in front of Starbucks at Venice Beach, California, a couple of months ago. I didn't get enough info on this car since it was driving away while I was drinking a coffee. Yet I knew it was so because it said smart on the car. Just to let you know, I saw one in the United States. I'm surprised how many people actually know what a smart car is, because it says smart on the back, but when you're passing by somebody, there's no way they could really see those words. So a lot of people have been crying out, "That's a smart car." So people know what they are. And so I guess the publicity, I don't know how the publicity has gotten out since they're not directing this to an American crowd. That's something I just don't understand. I guess people are just more aware than we give them credit for. Online, though, there is a smart car auction. Now, this is being run by the people at Zap Cars. Now, Zap is a company that supposedly is importing smart cars to the United States at greatly inflated prices, I might add. This one they have on eBay, first of all, it's 3 years old. It's a 2002 model. It has the word Zap scrawled on the side of it, so you think it's a Zap car, not a smart car. And it's going for nearly $30,000, which is staggering and double what you can get them for in Canada. So I think that tells us that people want these fuel-efficient models. It would be nice if it were easier for them to get them and they didn't have to resort to desperation. All right, enough said about that. Let's take a look at what's going on in the world. Pulled off the Associated Press wires only moments ago. Oh, good. A Utah sheriff says 11-year-old Brennan Hawkins is in unbelievable condition. Now, why are they saying that? Well, they're not just praising him for no reason at all. He was found today near a lake about 5 miles from the Boy Scout camp where he was last seen on Friday. Took a little detour. He's a little dehydrated, a little weak, but is otherwise in good health. You know, I'm happy. I'm happy the kid was found okay. I really am. But why is it that we have to be inundated in the major media? Why is it the top story on CNN about the missing kid of the week? You know, who's missing in Aruba? Who's missing in Utah? Who's disappeared in this particular locale? You know, if there's reason to believe that people all over the nation should be on the lookout for this kind of a thing, I don't think a kid wandering away from a Boy Scout camp in Utah is really news to us here in New York. I mean, yeah, it's interesting, I guess, if you're keeping track of such things. But the top story? No, it's not the top story. No way is it the top story. I'm sorry. I'm not speaking out in favor of missing kids or anything like that. So let's not let that interpretation get started. I'm just saying there are other things going on in the world that beg our attention, that we actually should have something to say about. You know, world events, even local events. And every time I pick up a newspaper or look at CNN or the Associated Press, it's the same old thing. It's just this gimmicky... Tabloid headline writing style that they have. And it really shouldn't be like that. Okay, here's something that I think is news. And I don't know why this comes below a kid in Utah being missing and not even missing anymore. It's a feel-good story, I know, but it's not the top news story of the day. A former Klansman has been found guilty. Yes, this is also another feel-good story, I know, but it's more important. A former Klansman has been found guilty of manslaughter in the deaths of three civil rights workers who disappeared in Mississippi. Get this, exactly 41 years ago today. It's interesting, isn't it? The jury reached its verdict on the second day of deliberations in the trial of 80-year-old Edgar Ray Killen. Well, gosh, his name is Killen. I mean, come on, what more could you ask for? Oh. I guess making fun of someone's name isn't right, is it? I don't want to offend anybody. I really don't. Especially a murderer's named Killen. The 9 whites and 3 blacks on the jury could have convicted him on more serious murder charges. Can you believe that? As a contraction. An Associated Press copy. Could have. I didn't know they could do that. I thought the Associated Press was like data. You know, you couldn't do a contraction. 9 whites and 3 blacks on a jury could have convicted. Okay, well, I mean, the sentence reads better. There's no question about that. But I always thought that we had to do that ourselves. That they didn't. It didn't come out of the machine like that. So, yeah, they could have convicted him on more serious murder charges, but chose not to. Killen showed no reaction as the verdict was read. He sat in a wheelchair wearing an oxygen tube and was comforted by his wife. Prosecutors said the evidence was clear that Killen had organized the attack on James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner in 1964. Their bodies were found buried in a grave 44 days after they disappeared. The killings were the subject of the movie Mississippi Burning. Defense lawyers said there was no evidence that put Killen at the scene. They conceded he was in the Klan, but said that didn't make him guilty of murder. My question is, how come it took 41 years for this to come to trial? You know, it's insane how long it took for somebody to actually bring this through. I mean, there was a 1967 federal trial, and an all-white jury deadlocked 11-1 in favor of convicting Killen. That's right. 11-1, but there was one holdout. And she said she couldn't vote to commit a preacher. Yeah. As if that somehow gets you out of guilt, especially these days. 7 other men were convicted of conspiring to violate the civil rights of the victims, namely their right to live. None served more than 6 years in prison. At the time, no federal murder statutes existed, and the state never brought charges. Again, you know, you may think like this is some kind of a triumph, but I think it's a travesty that it took 41 years to put this guy in prison. And look at him now. He's already in prison. He can't walk. He can't breathe. He's already lived out his life. Untouched. You have to wonder how many other cases like that we don't hear about. Okay, what else? What the president wants, the Senate Majority Leader will fight for. After meeting with President Bush, Bill Frist says he'll continue to push for a floor vote on the nomination of John Bolton to be UN ambassador. This is the guy that nobody likes. The guy that really, I think everybody knows deep down, will make a very lousy UN ambassador. But Bush is stamping his feet. And it's a Republican-controlled Congress, so we may very well wind up making yet another major mistake. Earlier, Frist had said he was giving up on the whole thing because negotiations with Democratic lawmakers had been exhausted. He said he and Bush did not discuss a recess appointment. Get this. Bush could bypass the Senate and install Bolton temporarily, and he'd hold that position until 2007. Can you imagine if he does that? Bypasses. Bypasses Congress. Wow. Democrats have been demanding documents to see if Bolton misused U.S. intelligence and abused those who disagree with him. For some reason, they're not getting those documents. I wonder why. Frist says he thinks Democrats really just want to hand Bush a political defeat. He says it's no longer about John Bolton. It's about the president. Well, gee. I would say that, yeah, it's about the president if they give them the documents and then they continue to refuse to vote. But I think there's probably enough here to prove that this guy is not the right person. In other news, military officials are calling Operation Spear, the latest anti-insurgency offensive in Iraq, a success. Colonel Bob Chase, the director of operations for the 2nd Marine Division, says 24 car bombs were found and destroyed, and 3 bomb-making factories were uncovered. Well, that's about a week worth of car bombs, I think. And he says nearly 4 dozen insurgents and foreign fighters were killed in the 5 days of fighting. Chase expects the death toll to go much higher, since it is believed that there were dozens more insurgents in the buildings that were bombed from the air during the offensive. I heard some houses were bombed, too. Saw that on BBC. Some military officials have likened the insurgency to the Pillsbury Doughboy. What is wrong with these people? You push here and it bulges out over there. Is this really the best analogy they can come up with? The Pillsbury Doughboy? I think this gives an indication of just how pathetic it all is. Oh, my God. Chase harbors no illusions. He says the insurgency is still alive and well in western Iraq. But he says this will not be the last operation of its kind, and U.S. and Iraqi forces will continue to hammer hard against those who wish to destabilize the Iraqi government. The new Iraqi government, that is. Because we already destabilized the Iraqi government when we went in there the first time. And stayed. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, I don't know if you caught this story. This is something that is just... It's too funny to believe. Saddam Hussein in prison. Soldiers speak out. Yeah, they're actually telling you what it's like to hang out with Saddam Hussein. He'd always tell us he was still the president, they say. He loves Doritos. I can't believe I'm reading this, but it's true. He loves Doritos, hates Fruit Loops, admires President Reagan, thinks Clinton was okay, and considers both Presidents Bush Sr., Bush Miniature, no good. He talks a lot, worries about germs. You know, so far, everything he said, I agree with. Hold on a second. This is kind of scary. He loves Doritos. Well, I don't really love Doritos. I can handle them. You know, I can hang out with them for a while. I hate Fruit Loops, yeah. I agree with that. Can't stand them. Admires President Reagan? No, you know, okay, I got to disagree with that. I don't admire President Reagan. Well, there must be something about President Reagan I admire. Given enough time, I'll think of something. All right, so let's let that one go by. Thinks Clinton was okay. Well, yeah, it was okay, I guess. Could have been good, but it was okay. And both President Bushes are no good? Yeah. He talks a lot. Worries about germs. And thinks he is still president of Iraq. Okay, I'm off the boat, finally. Never thought I was president of Iraq. Those and other details of the deposed Iraqi leader's life in U.S. military custody appear in the July issue of GQ magazine, based on interviews with five Pennsylvania National Guardsmen who went to Iraq in 2003 and were assigned to Saddam's guard detail for nearly 10 months. Now, the magazine is supposedly on newsstands now. They said the GIs could not tell their families what they were doing and signed pledges not to reveal the location or other details of the U.S.-run compound where Saddam was an HVD. HVD is a high-value detainee awaiting trial by Iraqi authorities for mass killings and other crimes. However, the five soldiers told GQ of their personal interactions with Saddam, saying he spoke with them in rough English. It's better than Bush can do, isn't it? Was interested in their... What? Was interested in their lives and even invited them back to Iraq when he returns to power. He'd always tell us he was still the president. That's what he thinks, 100%. Said Jesse Dawson, 25 years old, Berwick, Pennsylvania. A Pentagon spokesman had no comment on the article. The GIs recalled that Saddam had harsh words for the Bushes, each of whom went to war against him. Well, I guess you could hold a grudge against something like that, couldn't you? The Bush father, son, no good. That's according to one of the one of the National Guardsmen quoted Saddam as saying that. Saddam was quoted as also saying, he knows I have nothing, no mass weapons. He knows he'll never find them. Well, I know he'll never find them. I don't know if Bush knows that. The description of the man who once lived in palaces and now occupies a cell with no personal privacy matched recently published photos, apparently smuggled out of prison, showing Saddam Hussein in his underwear and a long robe. The story said that once, when Saddam fell during his twice-a-week shower, panic ensued. No one wanted him to be hurt while being guarded by Americans. One GI had to help Saddam back to his cell while another carried his underwear, the same underwear that was in a picture, I'll bet. Saddam was friendly toward his young guards and sometimes offered fatherly advice. When one of them said he wasn't married, Saddam started telling him what to do. He was like, you gotta find a good woman. Not too smart, not too dumb, not too old, not too young. One that can cook and clean. Then he smiled and made what the National Guardsman interpreted as a spanking gesture, laughed, and went back to doing his laundry in the sink. My God, it's like an episode of The Waltons. The soldiers also said Saddam was a clean freak who washed after shaking hands and used diaper wipes to clean meal trays, utensils, and table before eating. He had germophobia, or whatever you call it. The article said Saddam preferred Raisin Bran Crunch for breakfast, telling O'Shea, one of the National Guardsmen, no Fruit Loops. He ate fish and chicken but refused beef. For a time, his favorite snack was Cheetos. And when that ran out, Saddam would get grumpy, according to the story. One day, guards substituted Doritos corn chips, and Saddam forgot about Cheetos. He'd eat a family-sized bag of Doritos in 10 minutes. You know, this is just too pathetic for me to even continue. I'm sorry. What are we doing here? The country is invading other countries. All kinds of people are dying. There's no end in sight, and we're talking about whether or not Saddam Hussein likes Doritos or corn chips or Cheetos or whatever they're called. This is what the American media brings you, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry for my part in it, for continuing. What is it about this that draws me in? Oh, my God. Must not read the news anymore. All right, instead, let's look at some of our mail, because there's always sanity in the mail, right? All right, again, our email address, otw@2600.com. On Off the Wall, Emmanuel Goldstein made a comment about how he couldn't open the door to the studio. He said the combination was the same always, and then he caught himself and said that it was changed every couple of days. Yes, I did catch myself. Now, changing the door combo every 2 days would be quite secure. However, it would be difficult for humans to remember the combo. From my experience, the combo has changed almost never. Well, that's not true. We change it. In fact, you often see the keys, I think he's talking about in general, you often see the keys in use are worn, which makes it even easier. That's true. That's one way to get into these things, is just look at what keys have been used a lot. Then you can figure it out. I enjoyed the music that was played. I laughed hard when we talked about Heroin Appreciation Month. I continued to laugh when it was interrupted by the anti-drug propaganda. Signed, Michael. Well, thank you. Thank you for enjoying that. For the propaganda. Dear Emmanuel, you mentioned Belarus and Russia in your last Off the Wall show. It would be great if you could visit Latvia, too, which is neighbor to both other countries you mentioned. You see, in Russia, the U.S. is not quite popular. Something to do with the heritage of communism propaganda. But neither is Latvia. Why? Because about 40 to 50% of people living here are post-World War II immigrants from Russia. Of course, it was the USSR, after all, but they didn't leave after we reclaimed our independence in the early 90s. And now some of them are claiming that their human rights are in danger. After visiting all three countries, you could clearly see where human rights are endangered the most. Anyway, it'd be great to know where and when you will be, even if you're not coming to Latvia. Signed, Sandis. Thanks so much for that piece of email and the invite. No, I won't be making it to Latvia this time. I was in Latvia a couple of years ago. And I followed that story quite a bit, the Russian minority complaining about their rights, about the language, Russian language not being used in schools anymore. I visited the Museum of the Occupation of the Soviet Union. You have to understand that Latvia was occupied by the Nazis and then by the Soviets. And they don't have very fond feelings towards occupiers of any sort. So there's a lot of animosity towards Russians over there. And well-earned, certainly. But it's a fascinating country. I watched the changing of the guard in that little park with the goddess of whatever it is she's a goddess of. It stands with the three stars. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I think there's even pictures of it up on our website someplace. And next opportunity I get, I will certainly go back to the Baltics, because they're fascinating. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, three countries that not many people visit who go to Europe. But they're well worth the time to get over there. Usually the best way, I think, is either flying or by bus. Trains don't seem to really do it for some reason. They go there, but they're very slow. Okay, you're off the wall. In case you are not aware, Al Jazeera is planning on starting an English broadcast in 2006. You know, I've heard this so many times now. Al Jazeera being the Middle Eastern news broadcasters that many people think are a front for terrorist activity. Well, many people in our government anyway think that. I happen to think it's another perspective, and it's fascinating to see how the news is reported. And I think they do as good a job as they can do, given the incredibly sensitive situation they must be in, broadcasting from Qatar, however you pronounce that country. So you can go to aljazeera.net to see their website, and there's an English version of that floating around. This reader writes in, though, I have to wonder if this will really be readily available to the United States audience, or will it be like BBC World, where you can't get it in the United States? I would guess probably the latter. If they won't allow BBC World in here, I don't think they'll let Al Jazeera in here. But we'll be following that story. Thanks, Jack, for writing in. If they do have an English news channel, I'll try to figure out a way to get it, maybe through Canada or something. You're off the wall. In a talk I caught on C-SPAN 2, John Yoo, the former Assistant Attorney General under Bush, entitled from 2001 to 2003, entitled Legal and Economic Strategies for Fighting Terrorism, said that American computer hackers are an underutilized resource in the war on terror. A nice enlightened viewpoint, unfortunately, from a former something, rather. Ended the sentence there. Okay. Thought you'd like to know someone out there as a friend. I don't know if that's really the case. I don't know if hackers want to be thought of as a resource in the various wars that our government gets involved in. You know, I think they'd prefer to remain independent and show when either side isn't presenting things the way that it really is. Anyway, that's from Andy in Denver, Colorado. Thanks very much for writing in about that. Dear Emmanuel, it's hard to say anything new or insightful about the battle against the FCC. Some believe that allowing others to be exposed to things they find offensive creates a negative environment, and they want to control it. Others believe people should not expose themselves to what offends them, but allow others to make the same choice. I'm just simply in the latter camp. Please add me to your list of names. Signed, Mike from Boston. Mike, thanks very much. To give you a sense of how wacky it all is, though, there's this from Australia. Now, they have reality television over there as well. Yeah, it seems to be a worldwide epidemic. But get this, the nude antics of reality television contestants on the Big Brother program have prompted Australian government politicians to demand a review of how much nudity can be shown on free television. Can you imagine even having that discussion here? You see what appears to be a breast from a distance, and the country goes into lockdown. But in Australia, it's a little different. In fact, in the rest of the world, it's a little different. The fifth Australian series of Big Brother is the raunchiest yet seen in Australia, with the uncut version featuring regular nudity, views of the contestants in the shower, and a steamy hot tub romp by two contestants. Government MP Trish Draper raised her concerns at a closed meeting of government MPs and senators after the latest uncut episode of the program, classified for viewers 15 years and older, featured contestants taking nude photographs of each other. What we basically have is pornography and full frontal nudity on television at a time when children are watching. These people have an aspiration to be porn stars, Draper said. You know, how is nudity pornography? That's what I'd like to know, first of all. But keep in mind where these people are in Australia. You know, they're so far above where we are that they can have this debate while it's on television. You know, if it were possible, I think they'd outlaw the debate in this country. You can't talk about nudity on television. We have to stop people from doing that. A child might be listening. I watched something on Canadian television a couple of weeks ago. It was some kind of a CBC documentary about this girl who was constantly turning to drugs, and her family was in Intervention City. And I swear to God, you know, she must have burst into tears about 45 times in the course of an hour. It was you know, kind of sappy. But it was reality television. And as such, they used some pretty foul language. Yeah. But it was real. And I looked at the ratings on the guide, and it was rated for audiences of 8 and above. Now, what is so different north of the border, where somebody 8 years old or above can handle something like this? And people 45 and above can't handle it in this country. Or maybe we're programming everything for people 7 and under. That would explain a lot. Okay. Enough about that Big Brother thing. Just give you a sense of where other countries are. Dear off the wall, I heard on the May 24th show, and you left out one detail. The Canadian government, according to the news on a local radio station, had decided that U.S. soldiers cannot seek shelter from the U.S. military in Canada. The reason is the U.S. does not have a draft, unlike during the Vietnam War era, and therefore all members of the U.S. military made a choice to join, signed Steve. Well, I happen to know a lot of people are hiding out in Canada. Whether or not they are doing that with the blessing of the government, I'm not sure about that. But to say that everybody agreed to be in Iraq, you know, a lot of people who are anti-military say this. They say you're getting what you deserve because you joined the military. Well, you know, I can see that, but it's also not fair because a lot of people have been hoodwinked. And if you've ever been approached by a military recruiter, you know the high-pressure techniques they use to try and get you. So let's have a little sympathy. Let's try and help these people because they do need help. They have to get out of the situation they're in. And if you're in a situation like that, we'd like to hear from you as well. Write to us. If you're in the military or got drunk one night and joined up without realizing what you were doing and are scared now and looking for advice or anything like that, we'd like to hear what's going through your head. OTW@2600.com. Military recruitment is at its lowest levels. They're falling way short of their recruitment goals, and who knows what it is that they're going to do next, especially if another country gets invaded. All right, that pretty much does it for this abbreviated show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and looking forward to the days when we can take calls again. One important note, if you pledge during the last fundraiser, remember, we have a matching fund that hopefully will get us a delay machine, but we cannot make good on the matching fund until we know how much we're able to match. And that means everybody who pledged has to pay their pledge, or a number of people who have not done that. And if we were to say, okay, this is the matching fund as of this date, it wouldn't be enough. So if you made that pledge, please honor the pledge. It's very important. All right, it's Emmanuel. I'll be here again next week, hopefully on time. And we'll see you again then. Good night. Me llaman el desaparecido, cuando llega ya se ha ido, volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, rumbo perdido, cuando me buscan nunca estoy, cuando me encuentran yo no soy, el que está enfrente porque ya me fui corriendo más allá, me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está, me dicen el desagradecido, pero esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un dolor que no me deja respirar. Llevo en el cuerpo una condena que siempre me echa a caminar. Me dicen el desaparecido, que cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido. Me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está, me dicen el desagradecido, pero esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un motor que nunca deja de rolar, llevo en el alma un camino destinado a nunca llegar. Cuando me buscan nunca estoy, cuando me encuentran yo no soy, el que está enfrente porque ya me fui corriendo más allá. Me dicen el desaparecido, cuando llega ya se ha ido, volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido.
perdido, perdido en el siglo, perdido en el siglo, siglo XX. ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo rumbo llegaré? Al 21. ¿Cuándo llegaré? Me llaman el desaparecido. Perdido en el siglo. ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? Me llaman el desaparecido. ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? Me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está. Me dicen el desagradecido, esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un motor que nunca deja de rodar. Llevo en el alma un camino destinado al nunca llega. Me llaman el desaparecido, que cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido.